Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
Hey, Taylor.
Hi.
We had the privilege of talking to an employee of 518 for this episode who has taken a holistic approach to mental health, physical health, physiological health. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating to hear how the director of camps and facilities has such an understanding of mental health and human behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had Dan West, who, as Allison said.
Oh, yeah. I probably should have said that.
It's okay. She just jumped into it. She's really excited. Yeah, so Dan is the director of camps and conferences at 518.
I left that part out.
And it was just fun to hear about his intentionality with leading the camp ministry and all the things that makes Hat Creek Camp different from other camps. So we hope you enjoy.
Hey, everybody. As we were getting warmed up for this show, Taylor snorted. Kind of.
Like a laughing snort.
Yes.
Let's be clear.
Yes. So it's going to be a fun show because I feel like she's already warmed up.
So warmed up. I was born warm. Oh, gosh. Uh-oh.
Edit that.
Dan?
You do you.
How are you born, Dan?
From what I can remember, it was a little chilly.
Okay. No, fair enough. And to each their own. Hey, Dan. How are you? How's it going?
So good.
So good. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Captain Tell the people Dan. Who you are.
I'm Dan West. I am, who am I? I'm a dad of two children. I'm a husband of a beautiful wife.
That'll get you some points.
You
don't need any points?
No, I've banked quite a few points. It allows me the opportunity to make withdrawals from the from my relational currency every now and then.
Okay. I've never met a husband who's maxed out points before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't say it's maxed out. I'm just well above.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You have a savings account.
I do.
That's awesome.
I do. There's plenty in the bank. I try to do well. Christ follower, of course. My role with 518 Family Services is director of camps, conferences, and facilities. I'm a licensed therapist, personal trainer certification from years ago, brain health trainer, sports conditioning specialist, coach, lots of roles.
Love it.
Wow.
So you've become known around the organization as Captain Dan.
I've heard that a few times.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell the origin story of Captain Dan?
Yeah. So I started with the organization 2020, April 2020, if you guys remember.
Yeah.
March 2020.
A good time.
Everything
Seems
closed
familiar
down.
For some
Less,
reason.
I mean, a very low stress environment.
Oh, it was great for me.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah, it was a horrible, horrible thing that happened. But for me, it was great. It meant that I got to spend more time with my family. Kids were out of school.
Oh,
my wife's a teacher, so she was working from home. A lot of the work we did was working from home. And, you know, everybody was calling for isolation. So for us, that meant back to nature.
We got in the woods.
Lots of hiking, and nobody was there.
Yes.
It was great. So we got to spend a lot of time together. But during that time, I was hired, and we're going right into camp season. And I was determined to have camp regardless. So we
COVID
did have
camp season.
COVID camp season. Everybody was shutting down. We did not have overnight camps. We did day camps with all the social distancing and all the little markers. And we still have boxes of hand sanitizer there, you know, four and a half years later. But we were determined to have camp. And, of course, with camp season comes a theme. That theme was survival, I think, that summer.
Why?
Why? We all had to survive. We were all surviving at that time. The next year, it was more of a cruise type theme. So, you know, people entered the cruise ship. I had my captain's hat. I had this outfit, you know, captain's outfit. And we were navigating through different parts of the world and learning and sharing the gospel in different ports as we navigated through the week. But I became Captain Dan during that time. And I wore my captain's hat every day. And so I just became Captain Dan. And it stuck. I'm still Captain Dan.
And you'll have kids from that season that referred to you as Captain Dan for life.
Right. I think this year I was Pharaoh Dan, but I was still Captain Dan for a number of kids.
Yeah.
I would see kids in public that we served through camp, and they would yell out, Captain Dan.
Yeah.
And I guess I am forever going to be Captain Dan.
So how is your current role a combination of all the things that you mentioned in your intro? Like, why director of a camp?
It's a bit of a lengthy story. So I've been in the mental health field for 25 or so years. I'm a licensed therapist. During that time, I worked with kids in foster care as a reunification service or a prevention service, providing therapy myself, as well as running a company that offered those types of services. And then started working with a group of kids, providing physical training to participate in endurance events. That was a wonderful program. So what we were doing, we had at-risk, in-risk, and at-risk kids, and peer mentors for those kids. And we would do weekly training, a couple times, 2 to 3 times a week, and then travel the East Coast and participate in endurance events together. So we had kids that came from really hard backgrounds, as well as kids that had significant cognitive disabilities. We had a couple of kids who had autism, and we were taking these kids through obstacle course races and trail runs and things like that. Many of them had never even attempted something like that. So to see the growth in those kids was amazing. But in doing that, I decided that I really needed to understand what I was doing better. So I became a personal trainer. And out of that, just kind of grew this process by which we could dive into not only the physiological aspects of improvement in these kids, but understand the relationship that the physiological growth was having with their cognitive growth and their behavioral growth.
And if you think about kids who come from vulnerable backgrounds, you're not sure, are they eating? Mm-hmm. What have they been exposed to? What is trauma doing to how their brain functions? Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, oftentimes they have tons more energy. So what an awesome way to find an outlet for kids who may not thrive in, let's say, a school atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And some of that was to help sublimate some of that mm-hmm. energy. Right. Nutrition training was a big part of it. And I began to operate from this idea that the better you understand yourself, the better you're capable of self-regulating. So if we can understand our physiology, if we can understand our thoughts and our behaviors and how those interconnected, then the better we are of being able to self-intervene. So those types of things are what have carried over into our camp programming. And I felt it was important for all of our activities to integrate those aspects into it. So as we're shooting a bow and arrow, we're not just teaching them the mechanics of shooting a bow and arrow. We're helping kids understand how to calm their system, how to calm their bodies, understanding what their muscles are doing, understanding what their breathing is doing, in hopes that that's going to translate into real world application.
Wow. And then the high ropes.
Very anxiety producing yes. situation.
A lot of the things that you get to do as the director of camps, you know, it's adventure based.
Mm-hmm. It is. This is one of the most enjoyable jobs that I've ever had. I used to call myself director of fun. But, you know, I try to bring fun into everything that I do. And I try to have a good time. Why do it if it's not fun? So we have a blast. Our camp programming is 8 weeks during the summer. We serve hundreds of kids during that. But we also have programming throughout the year, serve over 1,000 kids a year through our programming. And it's all adventure, recreational based. But there's an intentionality there, a purpose associated with it.
I love the combination of it being largely adventure-based and recreational-based, but it's also disability-friendly. And I don't know if that's the right term for it, so feel free to correct me
inclusive,
if I'm wrong.
Inclusive, what would you say? Accessible?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think both of those are good words, inclusive, accessible. We like to say that we primarily focus on serving kids from hard places, but we serve anybody and everybody. My kids have been there, volunteered or participated in camp. My neighbor's kids have been there. Kids in my church have been there. So you don't have to come from a hard place in order to enjoy camp. But the thing that really makes us different is the fact that we have a trauma-informed approach. All of our staff receive specialized training in evidence-based modalities, so that they can better support those kids that do come from hard places and maybe need that extra support. We also have a really heavy mental health support at camp. We have our counseling program has interns and resident students that come down and run groups, and they're there to provide counseling services for the kids and for the staff. Because as you can imagine, we have these folks that are there during the summer. They're working all day, every day, and they're new to each other, and sometimes things happen, and it becomes overwhelming.
And you have homesick campers and probably homesick counselors.
We do.
I want to bring up a couple of things because I want to make sure that some of our listeners are not local, so I want to make sure they even know where the camp is. And I think it's so interesting. I went to camp here as a kid, so I grew up at this camp, but it's off the beaten path.
Yeah,
so tell people where the camp is.
It's left of nowhere.
Okay.
So if you're traveling to nowhere and you turn left, you'll find it.
Okay.
But in all seriousness,
in a beautiful way.
Yes, it's absolutely gorgeous. A beautiful piece of property. It's in Brooknill, Virginia, about 45 minutes, 50 minutes south of Lynchburg. And it's 350 acres. We have a couple of lakes, two smaller lakes, 7 miles of hiking and walking, biking trails. There's an 18-bedroom retreat center there, youth cabins, bathhouse, dining hall, archery, high ropes, low ropes, climbing wall, disc golf, kayaking, canoeing, paddle boarding, everything that you would expect
is
in a traditional youth camp.
Yeah, is that it?
That is not it. There's much more.
A dining hall, a craft house. We could go on and on.
Yeah, basketball court, beach volleyball. Yeah, there's lots there. Mm-hmm. But it's a smaller camp. You know, there are camps that are huge that serve, you know, thousands of kids on site. And that's not us. You know, we're a smaller camp. We have smaller camp weeks. We try to keep our weeks to around 30 kids, sometimes a little more, but typically around
that's
30
awesome.
Or a little less. But it allows us to be much more intentional and relational with the kids that we're serving.
That's powerful. And I think, you know, every time I talk, I acknowledge that I'm a middle-aged mom and I'm a little bit hyper-vigilant about my children. So if you're listening and your children have wanted to go to camp or you aren't quite sure about camps, I think there are always some day opportunities. You know, you could try it out if your kids have been interested in camp. This is not hours away from our city. It's a quick little drive, but you are very much in nature when you get there.
Yeah, and we're very accommodating. So if we have those kids that maybe are not ready for overnight camp, we'll allow them to come during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we also had day camp for the younger kids to help get them ready for that experience. We had day camp for elementary, day camp for middle, and overnight for middle. So, you know, with the idea that those kids could come during the day, and if they wanted to come back for an overnight, then they could. But even for our overnight camps, if there's a kid and a parent or a child's not ready for that, they can come during the day. You know, parents can come pick them up in the evening. That's fine. It's no problem. We'll accommodate that. I think one of the things that truly makes us different and special is that level of support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm reminded of a young lady that we had a couple of years ago. wonderful family. We had four of the kids there throughout the summer. But this young lady came. She had some significant cognitive and physical disabilities and really didn't have the ability to keep up. And she needed a lot of support. So we reached out to 518 staff and said, hey, is anybody available? Anybody know anybody that can come, volunteer, be a buddy for this kid? And one of the staff stepped up and came and spent the week there helping that child. Mm-hmm. And that child was able to experience a week as a normal kid, mm-hmm. and a normal camp experience that she would not have had otherwise.
She did the high ropes, right?
She came back this year. She did the high ropes. I hope that one day that we're able to show some footage of that, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we had two staff up there with her and walking her through the high ropes. And she had this song and she was praying while she was doing it. But just, I wasn't sure she was even going to do it. I mean, it's a scary situation for some kids, you know, mm-hmm. 20 feet off the ground, walking on tight ropes. But she had the support. She had two of our staff there. Brian Moss, who you've had on, was mm-hmm. there. Haley Rosario, who's our new programming coordinator, was there. And they got her through that. And she had such an amazing sense of accomplishment.
How are the other kids?
I was just getting ready to say that, yeah. as I'm over here almost crying, and I've heard the story 10 times.
Yeah, because we at 518, we know the story because it's been so impactful, and it's one of our favorite stories. But if you could talk a little bit about how kind of the other campers rallied around this child.
That was, watching her go through the course was amazing. Mm-hmm. I got a little teary-eyed during that time. But watching the other girls that, you know, her cabin mates during that time was unbelievable. I had told the girls and told the staff, I was like, you know, you guys can go ahead and go. It was time for lunch and we were running late. I was like, you guys can go ahead and go if you want. We'll catch up. And her cabin mates said, no, we want to stay down here and cheer her on.
And we're going to have to change the subject.
She's about to start crying. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
It was. It was beautiful. It was one of the greatest moments that I've had the opportunity to be involved in with kids.
And they'll remember that forever.
Yeah.
There's something else that I wanted to ask you from your intro. You said in risk and at risk. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for listeners to understand why in the family welfare or in the youth space that we use some different terms that maybe we hadn't used before. So why do you say in risk and at risk?
So in risk, you know, when I think of in risk, it's these kids that are already removed from their home. They're in foster care. They've been in detention centers, group homes. And then at risk are those kids that are engaging in risky behaviors, or they have a home situation or environment that places them at risk of removal from their homes.
Would you say that lots of kids are at risk?
I think if you look at the statistics involved, there are lots of kids are at risk for a variety of reasons, whether it be their own behaviors and things that they're engaging in, or the environment in which they find themselves, their home environment or community environment.
So you've mentioned how a summer is emotional and taxing, not only for some campers who are getting used to kind of the overnight camp setting, but also for counselors. How do you prepare a team of counselors for a summer of camp?
It's a good question. Last year we had 3 weeks of training. And that training is not just the nuts and bolts and the logistics involved in running camp. We prepare them for the youth that they're going to experience. So they have a lot of trauma-informed training that they participate in. But I think one of the most important things that we try to do is the relational training, that relational aspect of what we do. Mm-hmm. A lot of team building. They're living together, coming in. It's kind of like going to college and you have a new roommate and you have a new hall. You don't know the personalities. You don't know the people, and you're being forced together. You know, they're reliving that again in a summer camp mm-hmm. setting. So we spend a lot of time just helping develop those relationships. In addition to that, we have people that are assigned to those groups to make sure they're okay. And we do weekly devotional groups. And just give them opportunities. We have debriefing groups to give them those opportunities to be able to express themselves and to feel supported through that process.
I love it.
What about I mean, there are always rituals and songs and ridiculous things that happen at camp. Do you have to go through, like, learn this song boot camp?
That's a good question. I like that question.
We have skits. We have songs. Yeah, we have the things that we bring back every year. I like those, but I really like the opportunity to see folks be creative and develop new things. Mm-hmm. And bring experiences from other camps and bring that passion with them. So I like to allow people to be creative in their roles and do the things that they are passionate about and that they find fun and bring that joy to the group and to the kids.
Mm-hmm. Did you have rituals and songs when you went to Hat Creek Camp, Allison?
Yeah. But I can't talk about it. I mean, I think they're secret.
Oh, it's like Fight Club.
Yeah, there was a legend about an animal that lived in one of the lakes. He was part dog, part alligator. And I guess they would tell it around the campfire. And I came home and told my parents about this and really believed in it. And my dad still brings it up. It was the Rover Gator.
We're going to bring the Rover Gator back.
Yes. And
because I haven't heard that before, but I definitely want to.
No way.
For years, I've wanted to get a sign to put up that says, "Don't feed the alligator."
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty
don't
sure
feed
I was
the Rover Gator.
I'm pretty sure I was in the second grade, and my childhood best friend could validate this story that we believed in it. That was our first trip to camp.
That's tough for a first trip.
Yes.
Rover Gator.
Yeah.
But there are praise songs, and I remember a lot of the songs and a lot of the games. And when I was a child, this was a Presbyterian church camp, so it still looks the same. When I go into the dining hall, it still smells the same. I'm sure it's the pilot light or something, or 100 years of camp food. It's still nostalgic to me.
Yeah,
lots of updates that needed to happen.
Lots of updates and some growth and development there. We've had folks that have come back that were teens when they were there. Had a lady that I spoke with who was, when she was a teen, she was there and was part of the group that built the tree houses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Which is amazing. The tree houses are still standing. So that was an amazing group of teenagers that built these tree houses, or they had a really good supervisor that knew what they were doing.
And you still...
We still utilize the tree houses. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I hosted an adventure camp, which was a blast. So we were camping at different spots on the property and teaching survival skills. And as a night of luxury, we camped out inside of the treehouse.
That's right amazing.
Right beside the lower lake. Mm-hmm. I didn't sleep all night. The bullfrogs were extremely loud, but it was a blast. It was amazing. Then we finished the week with a simulated adventure race. So we did orienteering, we did biking. So they had to find different spots on camp and collect those, and then the group then
like the amazing race.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yep.
Brooke Neal edition.
Yep. Hat Creek Camp Amazing Race.
I love it. That's so fun. Life is messy, and sometimes people just need someone safe to talk to. We're here to listen because everyone's story should be heard. 518 Counseling exists to empower children, adults, and families to overcome past experiences and create a path to being stronger both mentally and spiritually. Family is a nuanced concept. 518's family care team brings simple solutions to complex situations through professional intervention, interpersonal support, and parenting education. We strive for an outcome of mending families and keeping children safe. 518's Connect team equips and empowers volunteers with the training and support to serve confidently by matching their passions with opportunities. Our outreach is targeted to build partnerships with individuals, churches, agencies, and businesses. At Hat Creek Camp, we provide exceptional camp experiences with careful attention to the needs of youth, encouraging campers to grow through trust-based challenges and successes. It's a place to build relationships, inspire change, and transform lives.
So grit, performance, and coaching, you know, grit is a big part of that. Resilience is a big part of how I operate through my personal life and professional life. And resilience is a big part of our camp programming. We have resilience curriculum that we utilize. Currently working on the development of resilience curriculum that's going to be integrated into all of our activities. so that our camp staff will have a guide to help that they'll be able to utilize and have conversations with kids related to resilience. Resilience is a huge part of overcoming those hardships. So grit, performance, and coaching actually was born out of the physical training that I was doing with those youth years ago, and the obstacle course races, the adventure races, the trail races, things like that. But then I started to take that and wondered how I could utilize that mindset and those skills that I was developing in a counseling or life coaching type role. So grip, performance, and coaching is not just the physical training. It's also life coaching. Mm-hmm. So I started doing life coaching with some folks and just thoroughly enjoyed that. Taking a coaching approach to the counseling that I was doing seemed to have a tremendous impact on those that I was serving, because we were able to not only look at the symptomology that they were experiencing when they came in, we could look at how those symptoms are manifesting throughout the body. Physically, what can they do? Like, there's not many people throughout my career that came into counseling that I did not recommend that they perform some type of physical activity mm-hmm. on a daily basis. Right. But then I started to wonder, well, what is it about that? Why does that help?
Why am I telling them that? And I think about it for adolescents, and I say this probably too much, but I will continue to say it. We chase dopamine, and there are many ways that you can get dopamine. There are many ways that you can get that warm feeling or that rush. You know, if you're chasing adrenaline or dopamine, there are healthy ways to do that. And physical exercise is a great way as an outlet. But I think the high ropes course, some of the adventure things that you're talking about, you're teaching people alternatives. And I absolutely hate when people think drugs or alcohol or mm-hmm. vaping or, you know, sleeping too much or video games. I mean, there are lots of things that we do to cope, but they have to understand that there are healthy alternatives that you can substitute.
Right. There are things that you can help. I mean, when you're dopamine and serotonin are mm-hmm. some of the primary ones. There's nutrition and physical activity. It's always good to be outside, get, you know, some vitamins from the sun, get your vitamin D in. And there's just something about being in nature. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of mindfulness work also. Mm-hmm. So, and grounding. So being in nature.
And take your shoes off?
Sometimes. Sometimes we've had a staff over the past couple of years that never wore shoes, and it kind of concerned me, but I'll tell you what, she is absolutely amazing. And maybe it's because she didn't wear shoes.
She's grounded.
She's wonderful. But, there's a lot of research around that. Mm-hmm. And I'm continuously curious.
And you're evidence-based.
And I'm curious. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that I want to understand, I dive into research. Mm-hmm. I read or view research every day. That's how I start my morning. Mm-hmm. You know, I say goodbye to my wife. I sit down with my coffee and my smoothie, and I start looking for something to read. I do it mm-hmm. every single day, Monday through Friday. And I can't get away from it because I demand knowledge and understanding of why that is.
I think it's really neat to recognize that the 518 culture is unique. You are pouring into kids and families. You're also pouring into camp staffers. So we joked with Brian Moss that maybe a good way to recruit people as counselors is to talk about 518 camp is not like the other camps. This is therapeutic. This is thoughtful. This is intentional. You're really thinking about things holistically. You really want your staff to be reflective of things. And we joked about they not like us. Because it's a different approach. And I think that a lot of that is because of your leadership.
Mm-hmm. And from what I've heard from what you've talked about with your kids and your experience in parenting, that you carry that resilience through your parenting style. So it's fun to kind of hear you dive deeper into what you're curious about, the way that you run camp, the way that you coach, because I feel like every aspect of your life like correlates into the other. And it tells me that you're a very intentional person. So
Captain Dad and Dad Dan.
Yeah. Captain Dad. I like that.
Captain yeah. Dad.
Yeah.
And so, Liam, did I butcher the Kendrick Lamar thing? Is it not like us or they not like
they
us?
They not like us is correct.
Okay. Sorry. I felt like such a boomer when I said that.
Yeah. But if you're comfortable, do you want to talk a little bit about how your parenting style kind of correlates to the rest of what you do?
We and definitely talk about which one is your favorite child. I think yes. that's really important.
We love stuff
well, that's
like
easy.
That.
That's easy. Okay. Yeah. You know, I can talk. We need a couple of days to set aside to talk about my children.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have two of the most amazing kids. I have kids that every parent would want to have.
Mm.
My daughter, I have a 19-year-old daughter. She's a sophomore at JMU studying kinesiology, wants to be a physical therapist.
That makes sense.
Which is great for us because mm-hmm. we frequently need physical therapy because of there some type of injury.
Get free services.
It's expensive.
It is expensive. So I'm really looking forward to that and doing and just killing it. Extremely intelligent, driven. And then my son is a sophomore in high school. One of the most athletic kids that I've ever known, but he's a little guy. Like, you know, he's 5'7", 5'8", 120 pounds, just as lean as you can imagine. So when he said that he wanted to do downhill mountain bike racing, so let me back it up. So when COVID happened, we were looking for things to do. All the races that we typically do were closed, right? We couldn't do those anymore. But adventure racing was still open,
mm-hmm.
okay? So we decided to do an adventure race. And we signed up for one. It was in Bayside, Virginia. So on the border of Virginia and West Virginia. And it was an 8-hour. He wanted to jump into the 12-hour from the very beginning. And I said, no, let's back it up.
8 hours.
Right.
Of yeah. some sort of physical activity.
But that's what we do. So for like some of the endurance events that I've done, so anywhere from 4 to 16 hours.
I am one who really struggles with treadmill minutes. Like I'm over here thinking, that's a work day. That's
yes.
a whole day.
But the 8 hours gets better because
for who?
Well, so the way I approach things, and, yeah. and I've done this for a long time. I don't even know when it started. The harder it is, the more it makes me smile. If I look at a mountain and it's going to be terrible and I have to climb it because I choose to climb it, I look at it and I smile. I was like, this is going to suck in the best way possible, right?
You're a maniac.
And put my head down and go.
This too shall pass like a kidney stone.
Yeah, and,
I'm in.
But then it's kind of like, you know, when you were in college, you saw the syllabus and you're like, oh, this is going to be terrible. And then you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad
mm-hmm.
because you've done it. You've experienced it. And then the next time it happens, you learn from that. And you have that same feeling when you look at the syllabus and you're like, oh, this is going to be terrible. But I remember how I felt the last time.
Mm.
It wasn't that bad. So at the end of this, it's not going to be that bad.
You're reminding me of a speech that I once had to research for when I was in school. I forget the exact kind of format or rubric of the speech, but I found this research-based quote that said, curiosity drives us to learn just the same as hunger drives us to eat. And I think that's kind of what you're describing here. You see something that's going to be awful and you smile because you know that you're going to learn from it and you're just ready to get after it.
It's not going to kill me.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the likelihood of me dying is low. The probability of that is low.
Wait a minute.
You're probably not going to die.
Right. The likelihood of some of the rest of us who don't do 8 to 12 hours
Allison
of adventure.
Would die.
Right. I would want to start more at like 30 minutes.
Sure.
Well, then yeah. start at 30 minutes yeah. and yeah. then set a goal.
Okay.
Have you ever been scared?
Have I ever been scared? You mean in the events that I've done?
Yeah, events-wise.
Or what scares you?
Right.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have been scared. Now I'm curious. Now I want to know why. So I'm going to dive into that.
Is camp scary? Like, do you get scared?
No, I don't know. I mean, fear is a driver. Fear yeah. is an opportunity, right? I think probably the reason that I don't get scared doing these is because I became a coach, and it was my responsibility to make sure everybody was okay.
Mm.
So as I would go through these events, everybody was in front of me. And I made sure everybody got through every obstacle, finished every mile, and I made sure they were safe. And I think that helped alleviate some of that.
Mm-hmm. So the title of this podcast is Mended Futures. Are you the product of a mended future?
I think for me, when you say product, it means the end result of.
Mm. Are you in the process of?
Yeah, I would say that to be true. So I'm the product of two teenagers. My parents had me when they were 16, 17 years old, dropped out of school, went to work. My dad went back and got his GED later, and my mom went back and got her diploma. I think we went to high school at the same time.
Oh.
I think it was around that time. I think, yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I remember us studying the same material at the same time. Hmm. And I remember one of the proudest moments I had regarding my mom, that she was willing that years later to go back and do that. Mm-hmm. Had two wonderful parents. So my parents come from really hard backgrounds, especially my mom. My mom was born in Pennsylvania, and when she was young, there's a newspaper article written about my grandmother, and her brothers went to Pennsylvania and loaded them up in a cattle trailer and a station wagon, brought them back to Virginia because they're originally from Virginia. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's husband was an abusive alcoholic. So she came back with the nine kids and raised nine kids on her own.
Wow.
We all grew up poor, but we never grew up in poverty. Mm. You know, there's a difference. You know, we didn't have a lot when we were kids. You know, I've heard story of when I was a baby, my parents couldn't afford a crib, so I slept in a dresser drawer.
Mm. That's all you needed.
That's all I needed.
I mean, when you think about it, I always tell new parents, you can get all these gadgets, but you could seriously put a baby in a laundry basket mm-hmm. with a blanket.
Yep. My mom's side of the family has, you know, a long history of alcoholism, drug abuse. I have cousins who have died from drug abuse. Mm-hmm. But my mom sheltered us from all that. And both of my parents are wonderful parents. They were terrible spouses, but they were wonderful parents. Mm. And, you know, love us. And my mom would say that she was put on this earth to be parents to my brother and I.
Oh.
Right. So it was important to her that we were okay. Right?
We could probably have follow-ups to so many things that you've said, but I've never heard someone say succinctly what you just said. Terrible spouses, but wonderful parents. Mm-hmm. That's something.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they were young. They were navigating. Mm-hmm. They were learning how to be spouses. They were learning how to be parents. And, you know, a lot of their teen years were disrupted by that, mm-hmm. right? They weren't allowed to grow because they had to grow up and be parents.
They were growing up with you.
They were. And they went to work. My parents are extremely hardworking. Yeah, my parents are in their 60s now. My mom cares for my grandmother, and she takes that on every day. Mm. And that's a hard job. My dad is still working. He still works in the same factory as when I was a kid. Mm. My mom worked in the factory. My grandmother worked in that factory. Mm-hmm. I think my uncle worked there for a while. My brother may have worked there for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. The expectation was that I was going to graduate high school. That was important for my parents that I graduate. Mm-hmm. And I assumed I was going to go work in the factory. Right. And then I met this beautiful young lady in high school that had different dreams than I did. Mm. And followed her to college and got married and had a couple of kids. So during that time, you know, I know these things are going on with my extended family, you know, the drugs, the alcohol, the police, the social services, yeah. kids in and out. My grandmother had adopted two of her grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So there were some significant hardships there, but they weren't things that I was experiencing directly. They were things that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. Now, was it hard growing up without sometimes? Probably, but that was my world, mm-hmm. right? I didn't know any different at that time. I remember when I was a kid, I would drive and was going to school. There was a house on the hill, and in my head, it was a mansion. And I would say, one day I want a house like that. Well, couple months ago, I was back home and I saw that house. It's smaller than the one I have now, and I don't live in a mansion, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it was a different world for me.
But you knew to dream.
And
you had hope.
It was hope. It wasn't really a dream. It's an idea. I kind of operate from this idea that dreams aren't reality for me, right? So why should I focus on dreams? If it's something that I see that I want, then I'm going to work towards it.
It's a goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It becomes a goal. And I become obsessed with that, right? And I pour everything into that. You know, that becomes it's part of that curiosity. Everything gets poured into it. But yeah, it's those things. Like a dream is something that I say that I may look at and be like, I can't do that. I can't. It's not attainable. So I'm not going to focus my attention on that. You know, I believe we have a finite number of decisions we can make on any given day. So why spend time and energy focusing on that one when I can spend that brain capacity on something else that's probably more important, right? So as I was navigating through these, and I met this beautiful girl, and I was kind of floating through life, and I was floating from one thing to the next, and it probably wasn't by accident, you know, whether it be God's plan or God had given me, you know, skills, talents, and abilities, and I was utilizing those, great, but I didn't recognize that, and it wasn't until I became a father that I started to take control and started to analyze based on my past experiences, based on my what I saw with my parents. What kind of father am I going to be? What kind of future do I want to have? What do I want to teach my kids? How do I want to create a mended future for them? Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I say them. It was just my daughter at the time. But I did that when I got married, too, based on my experience with my parents as spouses.
Are they still married?
No. No, they divorced. I graduated high school, or I graduated college. My brother was still in high school, and they divorced. Mm-hmm. There's a whole story there that I won't get into that story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
And part of that is, they're still there, mm-hmm. right? That's their story.
That's their story.
Yeah, that's not mine. But it was tough.
What are your ACEs? You know, when you think about adverse childhood experiences and it's the way we measure some things, do you have a high ACEs score? It sounds like other people in your family would.
Yeah, so it's moderately high, and there were things at home that increased that score too. I mm-hmm. mean, there were some bad times, mm-hmm. right? I take a little different view of those ACEs because I've taken it several times, mm-hmm. and sometimes my score has been different. And sometimes I think it's based on the season that I'm in and my thought patterns at the time and how I'm processing things and how I interpret some of those, because I feel like I focus a lot of attention on gratitude and happiness mm-hmm. and try to find the best in situations and try to find opportunities. So when I read those questions, I may look at it and be like, yeah, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. There are people who
it could have been worse.
It. Yeah. There are people who have it worse.
Yeah.
So how can I score myself on that one? When maybe it's not as bad as somebody else.
So we qualify.
I do.
It's hard.
Yes.
It's hard.
One other thing that I want to bring up is how much your eyes lit up when you talk about your current spouse, your only spouse, and the importance of a meaningful relationship. You're always going to hear us talk about one of the ways that you're going to mend someone's future or one of the ways that you can change their trajectory is a meaningful relationship. You've been a meaningful relationship for so many people along the way, but your eyes lit up in a different way when you talk about her. Do you think she changed your trajectory?
Oh, of course, without a doubt. My experience as a child helped shape, you know, who I became as an adult. But my wife is the reason that I am the person that I am today. I want to continually be somebody that my wife is proud of. My mom used to say, she said this to me when I got married and when we were thinking about having kids during that time. My mom said, I tried to lead my life in a way that I would never do something that my kids were embarrassed of. Now, I intentionally embarrass my kids, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's good parenting, but nothing bad. But what she meant by that is I'm not going to, you know, do the drugs and I'm not going to drink and I'm not going to do all these things and my kids be embarrassed. So with my wife, I want to do something that my wife and my children can be proud of, not just not embarrassed about, but I want them to be proud of that. And I want, you know, when they look back and they think about my legacy, I want them to be able to say, yeah, Dad did this. This mm-hmm. is the type of person Dad was. Right. But my wife is the reason that I am the person I am. I want her to be proud of me.
Where does the 5:18 verse come into play with your life, with your work? And specifically, I think there are multiple ways to define reconciliation. How are you seeing reconciliation here on this earth, but also the verse more meaningfully is talking about reconciliation with God? Mm-hmm. How do you see that in your role with 5:18 in your personal life? Do you see it?
I do. And I never really put much thought into that until we started having those discussions and there was the name change. Mm-hmm. And as I do with everything, I start digging in and wanting to understand it more and thinking about my personal experiences, reconciling with family. But it's not even just a reconciliation. For me, it became about deepening those relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's just the aspects within those relationships that need to be reconciled. I can have a good relationship with my spouse or with my kids, but what are the pieces of that that I need to improve in? So that it can become even better. Camp was a difficult one for me to wrap my head around in terms of reconciliation because I come from a world. So I worked in community mental health. I owned my own behavioral health company for a number of years. I was a consultant in various areas in youth development programs throughout the state, worked for nonprofits, came here, and then I'm a camp director, right? So I worked with all these programs that were working towards reunification. And for me, reconciliation was that, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, how does camp fit into that? But then when I started to dig in and I started to understand for myself, in my view, that it may not just be reconciling or reunification or those relationships. Sometimes it can be even with yourself, mm-hmm. right? Understanding where you are in terms of your relationships, relationship with yourself, relationship with others, relationship with God, and how can you improve those to be able to live that life of fulfillment so you can feel full, right? I've tried to leave the mental health field, the human services field. Mm-hmm. I even went and got a whole nother degree to be able to do that. And every time I tried, there was a hole there. There was something there that just wasn't filled. And regardless of how good the conversation was and good the interview was, there was something there that wasn't filled. So I needed to reconcile that, which means I had to really focus in on, you know, what was important and what is it that God was wanting me to do? Mm-hmm. How can I use the skills, talents, and abilities that God gave me to be able to allow other people to live that life of fulfillment?
And I think I want to pause there for a minute because there are so many people who are going to be listening who are thinking about burnout or career switching or, you know, I left education, but I'm in a similar helping role. And sometimes we ask ourselves, would it feel better to just punch a clock? Is there somebody who just goes to work, does the work, and then comes home? And you're describing that hole, you know, if you feel like something's missing, is that your calling?
I tried
to not listen.
I was determined.
You weren't answering, right. But it was still calling.
I was determined to go make more money and it became about making money.
Right.
And if we've learned anything in this conversation, it's that when you're determined to do something, it happens, except for this, it sounds like.
Right. But then there were signs, right? And there were weird things that were happening.
Talk about some of that, because there have been a number of guests, you know, we talked to, I think James Hobson was one of them, you know, Brian Moss. We've talked to many people, Mike talking about leaving Texas. They didn't even know why they were doing these things. Talk to folks about what the signs are, and for you, because sometimes we don't want to recognize these things, or we don't want to listen, or we don't want to. So what were some of those signs?
There were signs then, and there have been signs that let me know that God was talking to me or using me, not talking to me, but using me in certain ways. And I don't know why that was happening. There was a time when I was down emotionally, physically, I was exhausted. And it was burnout. And I was burnout a couple of years before I even hit that point. But I was an endurance athlete, so I was grinding through it. Like, it was as though, you can't hurt me, right? Mm. Only I can hurt me. You can't hurt me.
So maybe flat tires in one race were a sign?
To keep going.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right. Clearly. That's what it was. And I was approaching career and life in the same way, right? The sign for me was when I was no longer being a good parent and I was no longer being a good spouse, right? When I found myself yelling at my son, and it wasn't his fault, because that's not me, right? Yeah. When I found myself pulling into the driveway and having negative thoughts and thinking, wait, that's not you, right? Why? And I knew something needed to change. And for me, it's like, okay, you need to go work in finance. You need to go work, some administrative job, insurance, whatever it
may be. Make widgets.
Yeah, exactly. Something different. But the true sign, I think the sign was when I would leave those discussions and would think, that was great, but where's the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the meaning in that?
Yeah.
Right? And then one day I was running, and I just stopped in the middle of running, and I just started praying.
That's a very Forrest Gump thing to say.
My daughter has run on part of the road.
Really?
Yeah, she was running on the road. I have video of my daughter running on the road where Forrest Gump ran. But yeah, I was running and I stopped and I prayed, which is not typical of me. I approach things a little bit differently. My relationship with God is my relationship with God. So it's hard for me to pray in front of groups of people, for groups of people, because for me, my genuine conversation with God is just us.
It's yours.
Right. And so it was a little atypical for me just to kind of stop in the middle of what I was doing, which I was running because I needed to get my head in the right place. And I prayed for myself for the first time ever. And I prayed for guidance and I prayed for help. Because as I've said, God has given me skills, talents, and abilities. It's up to me to utilize those. He's given me all that I need. So I've worked off this idea, this belief that I don't need to ask God for more because he's already given me what I need, right? But I couldn't find it. So I stopped and I prayed, what do I do? Show me the guidance, show me the way. I'm not asking for me to receive something. I'm asking for clarity. And then I had conversations with people at Patrick Henry Family Services, like within a week, which is now 518, and led to this job, which initially I was like, no, I'm not going to do that because that's the same type of work. But it was different enough that I could wrap my head around it. And I kind of thought, yeah, I can do that for a couple of years until I figure out what I want to do. Well, that was 4 years, 8 months ago. And I don't know if I'll ever leave because I truly believe that this organization does what it's designed to do. It's carrying out the activities that God has assigned to it and the people here. It is the group of people that we work with here is the most Christ-centered group of people that I've ever experienced. I've worked with numbers, lots of nonprofits and consultant work throughout the state. It operates like a true nonprofit and they're doing it right. Right. Or we are doing it right.
Or differently. Whenever I'm around in meetings, I think, man, this is this is different. And it feels healing to me whenever, and I'm an outsider, but when I'm in some of the meetings, when I'm in this room, it feels healing to me.
But for me, that's the right way to do it. So when I say they're doing it right, you know, that's...
It should be healing.
Right. That's the way it should be. They, you know, we operate in a way that I think faith-based nonprofits are supposed to operate. So that was a sign. That was a sign, right? Mm-hmm. That was a sign that this, or this was going to be home, right? Now, what do you do with those skills, talents, and abilities? And that's what I've tried to do, right? And a big part of that is how to help the next generation of people. So it's very important to me that I take the people that are working with me and working for me and help develop them, whether that means they stay here or they move on to another aspect of their career somewhere else and use their skills, talents, and abilities. But I want everybody to grow within their jobs and then out of their jobs. So career development is really important to me, too.
That's awesome. Right?
Well, is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up?
We do need, every year we need camp counselors, and we're scrambling at the end of the year. Now, this is a nationwide problem. It's not something that we face every year exclusively, but we need camp counselors. We're in the hiring process now. So we start our hiring process around October and really kind of kicks up in February, March. You can go on to 518.org and go to our job page, and you can apply for camp counselor jobs. So we have day counselors, overnight counselors. We have our food service manager, I think, is secured. And we've secured our team leads. But we need health service officer. Ideally, that would be a nurse. It can be somebody that's in nursing school and can administer medications. So we do have a need for that.
Talk to the people about who makes a good counselor, or why would you want to be a counselor? You're coming from a mental health background. I'm coming from an educator background. Why camp counselor?
Well, very first requirement is you like kids. That's important. Important that you like kids. I love the idea of having folks that students, you know, college students that are in human services programs. So in psychology programs, social work programs, or if it's educational programs, these are the folks that they want to work with. They want to work with kids.
Or ministry.
Or ministry. There are colleges that have camp ministry programs. So those are great. We're now hiring high school students, so 16, 17-year-olds, they can work as day counselors, not overnight counselors. So they can come and they can work, get that experience. And those teenagers can then get their high school week for free if they want to come to camp.
Cool. Oh, neat.
So they can have that opportunity. But like kids, have a passion for working with kids, have a passion for Christ, and willing to share the gospel with these kids. Have a sense of adventure. Have a willingness to become comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Be part of a team.
Be a part of a team. Work together as a team. You know, all these specialized activities, the skills associated with that. There's training involved. Everybody gets that training. Lifeguards are always important. So we'd love to have some lifeguards. But if there's people out there that have kayaking, canoeing certifications and experience, that's helpful. Archery. I chose to be an archery instructor because it's so difficult just to find people to be able to do those things. It's also difficult to find certification programs for those. So rifle instructors, things like that. So we can get people trained and train people, but if they come to us with some of that experience and training, it's really beneficial.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been fun.
It has been fun. It's always fun. I try to have fun in everything that I do.
Yes. Yeah. Captain of Fun.
Captain of Fun, Captain Dan, Captain Dad.
Yes.
Boom.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.